Play Comics is a show that I take very seriously. Obviously, with the subject matter, there's a lot of room to have fun. But in the end, especially with these bonus episodes where I talk to creators about what they're making, what we're looking at is part of their livelihood. I try to present these episodes, and really every episode, as factually as possible. Inevitably, when talking to creators, though, this means that I have to take a lot of things as true because I have no way of fact-checking feelings or opinions or behind-the-scenes information that's hidden from the public. When Mark Bernal from Lesser Known Comics asked for an opportunity for rebuttal with regards to bonus episode number 69, Legacy Comics with Patrick Hickey Jr., I was told multiple times that some of what Patrick had said was untrue or misleading. I felt like I had to hear Mark out about that. To ensure that Mark, Jackie, and Charlie's story and interpretation of past events is presented as cleanly as possible, this episode is presented with minimal editing. In fact, the only things I'm taking out at all are some technical difficulties. This is to help make sure that their words, tone, and overall delivery can speak for themselves without any input from me. For the full context of what Mark was concerned about, be sure to listen to that previous episode, Legacy Comics, with Patrick Hickey Jr. There is a link in the show notes here. With that, let's hear that rebuttal from Lesser Known Comics.
I'm Stephen John Drew from Better Podcasting, a podcast about podcasting, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome back to Play Comics, where, once again, video games. Who needs those? I started the show like that, but who cares at this point? Today, we have Mark, Jackie, and Charlie here from Lesser Known Comics, just to talk about what they're doing over there, and a little bit of their thoughts after hearing the last episode that came out.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris, for having us on, having me back on. I did the show... Gosh, a while back, by like over 6 months. So certainly appreciate the opportunity to come back on and bring Jackie and Charlie along.
And I always like getting new guests here, you know, new guests, new perspectives, all that fun stuff. So I guess what were y'all's initial thoughts?
Well, I think
hearing how that the last episode that I put out went.
Yeah, I guess, I start and then I just turn it over to Jackie and Charlie. But I think generally we were super bummed to hear, the last podcast. We don't want anyone to have a negative experience at Lesser Known Comics. Clearly us and your last guest had, didn't agree on a lot. But we still respect, him as a creator. If we didn't think he was talented, we wouldn't have dedicated so much time and resources to the books. And, we're a new company, right? So we're definitely are not free from making mistakes, but everything we do is geared towards helping creators. We see making indie comics as a mission, not a competition. So we have so much respect for everybody who's out there making any sort of indie comic book. Super appreciative of you giving us the opportunity to, bring Jackie and Charlie onto the show, talk about what it's like to be part of the lesser known, family. And, we're a big team. We have 10 creators. We actually have 4 more that are like onboarding. So they're the best ones to ask if anyone wants to know, like, what it's like day to day, at Lesser Known Comics. So that being said, I'll let them kind of speak, for what their experience has been. And we'll give you updates of what we got, in the hopper. I think 2022 is going to be an awesome year.
Well, I would like to start by saying, I'm just the graphic designer. I have like the least sexy job of everyone in the company. You know, my work is to really serve the artist. So yeah, as Mark said earlier, like when things go wrong, I'm like, oh damn, dang, did I mess up their books? Because making comics is totally a team effort. Every single person is important. I really trying to serve the artist and make their vision a reality. So it's always heartbreaking, when that doesn't work out, but yeah. But I love being a graphic designer. I love being able to see all the process of how the art goes, and from the sketches to the, oh, this would be a good merchandise piece, or I think we should format the book like this, or what if we didn't have any dialogue because it would make the story interesting. And getting to be a part of that is really exciting. I'm also an illustrator myself. I do random little doodles in the back of the book sometimes. For the most part, I love design and I love comic books. So this is a really happy place to be.
Yeah, I agree. I like to also write. I don't just illustrate. So what was really exciting about starting to work with lesser known comics for me was that you get to be both writer and illustrator, world builder and illustrator. You have more contribution to the writing than I think you would in a traditional comic book setting. A lot of times you only do one thing. You're just the penciler, or you're just the inker, or just the colorist, or you're just the writer, but I dabble in all of those things, and I do all of those things. So it's really nice to be in an environment where I can kind of flex like every single one of those creative muscles. And I'm like rewarded for that. I personally feel kind of held back if I have to just do one thing. So yeah, I find that really awesome about lesser known.
Yeah. Background on Charlie, so she started working on one of the books I was writing, and then she said, oh, I got this other stuff going on, and I saw her writing and I was like, yeah, Charlie, you are a far better writer than I am, so let's kind of change our dynamic. Well, I mean, you wrote like essentially half of what the one that we did together, so it's like because it's those little things, right?
Take over sometimes.
Yeah, it's like those little things, like it needed ads, like we made those like fake ads for like to build the world around the story.
Yeah.
The adventure of the bar that they would go to and who's the owner and what's his name and why does he have like a nasty comb over and all that stuff. Like I didn't write any of that. So that's really like the rewarding part for me. Your men watching Charlie and the other illustrators nerd out together, where they take Easter eggs from each other's books and say, oh, well, Franco put this in his book, so I'm going to put this in my book, or Abel did this thing, so I'm going to put it in that book.
Right, so that, or like the synchronicity of all of us just conveniently doing things that have severed hands and like that weirdly lining up. We're all just on the same wavelength.
Yeah, that's a lot of the fun part too. So, I think that probably provides some insight into our overall like style or whatever, of just being like, if I can be out of the process and creators can crosstalk, and collaborate, then like I just think there's more room for growth. And then also not everyone is necessarily having to carry the load at any given time. So we've definitely had illustrators that were either out for various reasons. Or like, for example, we have, two that are getting married. At some point they're going to have to go on a honeymoon and they shouldn't have to worry about making comics. But if everybody else in the team is kind of immersed in the universe that they're doing, then that load becomes much lighter. I've been really happy with watching them nerd out together, you know? Because I think when you have fun, then the hard work becomes easy.
Yeah, I would also like to just interject about what Charlie was saying earlier about, you know, she can kind of just, she's like, hey, I have this idea, let's go for it, you know? And like, I love working for smaller businesses as a designer, because a lot of times I've worked for other places where I'm like, okay, you know, this will be good for the resume. And I go and they just treat me like an ant, you know, and they're like breathing down my neck, like, okay, you have, this has to be blue. Okay, no, a little to the left. Okay, no, change it back to red, like this, you know, and just constantly, you know, there's no like creative decisions that I really get to make in other larger companies, that is. And so sometimes I'll just go to Mark and I'm like, hey, we need to have this ad and it's going to have, or this merchandise is going to be a little inappropriate, but I just think it'd be hilarious. And he's like, all right, Jackie, go for it. You know, sky's the limit. So I really love having that freedom as well.
Yeah, I definitely like the ability to make executive decisions on my project. And especially for you, you know, having a client tell you, you know, this, that, the other thing, you're the graphic designer, you would know what looks best. And I know when I started working with Mark, he was kind of like, you know, I bring the writing, but you bring the visuals. Like, you, I want you to tell me what looks good, because that's your specialty. So having the artist being able to, again, make those executive decisions and, you know, just control all those visuals is really nice. And I think you get a better product at the end of the day, because again, you have the expert just doing their job, you know.
definitely
looking at man, the pepper strikes again. Looking at another side of rewarding, I know Mark, last time we talked, you were still in the middle of giving away all of the comics to just get your name out there, get things in people's hands. Is that something y'all are still doing? Is that something you're kind of winding down now? How's all that going? And I hear none of Mark's answer.
Oh, hey,
my bad. My bad.
I
muted myself while I wasn't talking. Yeah, I think... you know, for the most part, the business model stays the same from the standpoint of through 2022 is to give out as many comics as possible, grow the readership. And that's why we do like, you know, like the salary thing. So if you were to count up the comics that, you know, say Charlie would have to sell, you know, we would have to sell for Charlie to make her royalties make sense, you know, for it to be a royalty driven company, then like it's pretty big, right? Because it's not just, you know, paying the illustrator and paying the letterer, you know, it's also printing the book. It's also paying Jackie to do design. It's also the advertisements that go into things and all that stuff. So, you know, the flat rate is to protect the creators, you know. So at the point that the book outsells the flat rate, you know, we flip that as well. You know, the compensation, you know, because we, you know, I think everyone's pretty familiar with like, okay, you print a comic, if you're able to do offset printing, you can get it down to like a certain price, and that makes your comic, you know, because we're talking about somewhere between 50 cents to like $1.50 profit on a comic book, right? But if they're in stores or they're doing digitally, you know, that value, you know, or that that profit margin gets sliced, you know. So so in many cases, like if you wanted to make, you know, $8,000 or $4,000 off of a comic, you know, you may have to sell $8,000 or even $16,000 in comic books, you know. So that's just a long climb for a first year, you know, creator. You know, people have day jobs. A lot of the creators have day jobs. Some of them, you know, who don't have day jobs are, you know, full-time freelancers. So they can't be doing a comic book and waiting for, that, you know, to pay out, you know, they'd have to take on, you know, other lucrative projects that have immediate payout, because, you know, we all got bills, you know, and then we all have unexpected expenses, you know, that come up, you know, Katie, the internet, you know, in the middle of winter, like went out in her apartment for like, what it felt like forever, but she got paid that entire time, you know, and it was a big protection, you know, because, her other clients, you know, didn't necessarily have that same setup. So there's a little bit of, risk on our part, but we feel like, we shouldn't profit because somebody else, you know, lost internet or got sick and couldn't, you know, perform or whatever. And, you know, we have to believe that it's all going to shake out, you know, in the long term.
Do you have a goal for when you're going to be able to flip on the royalty switch and off the salary switch?
I don't think it's going to. So I guess short answer is 2023 is, you know, like really what we're like hoping. There's a lot of things when you come like balance values and realities, you know, we don't see putting comic books in the LCS as necessarily a way that we're going to generate a ton of revenue, just because they're going to buy them at 55%, you know, wholesale. And then, you know, like that's not a huge, huge margin. So a lot of the big money, right, is in, you know, going to conventions and doing Kickstarters for individual books and getting the associated stuff. So, I would say, 2023 is the goal. It may be different for each creator. So we just had this conversation with Charlie and a few others. It's, you know, I think we're going to just have, you're on salary unless your book's making more money than your salary, then we switch it to, you know, to royalty at that point. Cause she brought up an example of a past job she had where essentially it was commission. And if your commissions outdid your normal pay, then you get the, you get the commission. So the flat rate should just be a insurance policy that your work won't go unacknowledged. That's generally how I see it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, are you planning on having that be like retroactive to everything that they've put out when they start getting to that level, or just on newer things that are made?
I don't know if I understand the question correctly. So like
if I put out a book now and I'm on salary, uh-huh. And then mm-hmm. in 6 months I'm selling 5 million copies a day because that's a ridiculous number. So we all know that would work.
Yeah, I think the plan generally is that we would be looking at quarterly earnings. So at the end of a quarter, right, you can say, okay, we did really good this quarter. So that puts more of the advantage in the artist, because you imagine, right, your sales will spike and dip depending on the books. And we track those royalties a little bit different depending on the creator. So like Andrea has the most books, you know, so I think he's the closest to reaching there, because every time that we do something and people get like a bundle of books, he's got essentially like 3 books in that bundle. And so he's probably quickest to get to that, you know. But it's never as easy as that, you know, because some of our creators, every creator works differently, right? So like some just make books faster than others, right? So like Katie makes books, probably she's probably the slowest creator, but you see the excruciating detail like that she does on each page. So we'll just have to, you know, perhaps that'll balance out in a different place where, you know, different type of merchandise, art prints or something like that, maybe more lucrative for her. But yeah, the plan is every quarter people would look at the, you know, the earnings call, you know, and we do everything collectively, from a standpoint of like, you know, what do we want to do with those earnings?
I mean, I would like to interject to say, you know, I'm someone who went to business school. It's sort of a stranger model. Interesting. But it's in our mission statement to say we're choosing our artists over profit. And, you know, obviously we're in our beginning stages. So the investment that Mark makes in me, I'm also investing my time into this and this company because I believe in it. He believes in me. Totally okay to disagree with this risk. But I think ultimately it's about like the reason behind all these decisions is because we're trying to build something together and an incubator model, basically, to have artists start, learn how to make comic books, you know, learn how to work with a designer, we're all learning together. And so, I think that's why we're like, okay, let's just try this until 2022 and then see from there 2023, et cetera. I don't know if you want
to. I mean, to that mark. Point too. Yeah. One of the good examples is Digital Lizards of Doom. Like, so Gabe from Digital Lizards of Doom, he closed out a Kickstarter where he raised an absurd amount of money, like, you know, like over $20,000. And he said, oh, I want to come to Lesser Known Comics. And I was like, why? Like, I'm trying to be where you're at. And he was just like, he's like, oh, you know, it's so much to create and publish and handle that part. I just want somebody to publish my book that's not like breathing down my neck all the time. And I said, okay, well, we certainly can meet you on those terms. He said, I have my own, you know, media, you know, company, you know, that's been pushing the books. He's like, so I'm thinking of decommissioning that. And then, you know, I'll just, you know, you'll be essentially, you know, our media company and our publisher. And I said, I don't think you should do that. I think you should keep it, you know, in hibernate mode, you know, get your bearings back, you know, like, you know, reorganize. And when you want to take your book back out of Lesser Known Comics, like, do it, you know. I think him and a few other creators are most likely going to get offered an absurd amount of money to go somewhere else. And I'm excited for that, you know, like that's good for everybody on the team. And we wouldn't do anything to discourage that, you know?
Yeah, I think one thing that I really like about Lesser Known Comics is like, it's for the culture. It's people that love comics getting together and making comics. It's not about, I guess, just what's going to sell or what's necessarily going to be, like, popular. It's about making good narrative media, good art. And I think when you allow more of that in circulation, you know, you're not getting the same cookie cutter stuff all the time that you see over and over and over. So you're getting some fresh blood pumping through the system, and I think that betters the whole culture. And then, you know, just the entire industry is lifted up by that. So I think that's really cool.
So what are y'all doing to make sure that your books are in as many hands as possible? Man, let me do that again. What are y'all doing to make sure that your books are in as many hands as possible? Still muted.
Sorry. Step number one, yeah, is to just grow readership as much as possible. So that's where we really focus on the digital download, the free digital download on the website. We are experimenting with a couple of titles that we have at, like, you know, lower prices for like $2.99 and stuff like that. But when I talk to local comic shop owners and stuff like that, because we've visited, I think, you know, over 40, 50 shops across the country at this point. Every single one of them says that digital does not cut into their big sales. Because the truth is, right, you have those people with the pull lists that they're spending the majority of what the LCS's revenue is on physical copies, right? And somebody will read a digital for a long enough time, they're going to go get that trade paperback. so to us, giving away the digitals for free is huge. Portion of giving away the stuff for free at local comic book shops is, we all have heard the nightmare stories of like Diamond and books showing up, you know, damaged or late or not at all or whatever. So there's a lot to be sorted out with the distro model. And as a new publisher, right, if someone wants to buy books from us, we have to deliver them, you know, competently, on time, undamaged. That's a massive thing to scale up right away. And so there's a lot more to be gained by saying, okay, hey, comic book shop, instead of you doing a initial purchase with us, let's send you like essentially like a sample, sample platter of like all our books. And I want to hear that you're happy that they showed up on time. They showed up undamaged. You like the books. You put them in the pull list of your favorite readers that you know would like those particular genres, because we've got a ton of different genres. The value of those comic shop owners, you know, so Mission Comics in San Francisco, Comic Signal in Michigan, Limited Edition in Texas, All Star in Texas, like we're getting that research and development back, right? Where they say, yeah, you gave me these 10 books and, you know, these 7 were really popular with the people that I put them in their pull list. When you sent it UPS ground, you know, it ended up showing up late, you know, so it might've been worth, you know, spending a little bit more to make sure that it, you know, got here, you know, at a certain time. Cause there's the things that are not in, you know, the comic book making, you know, manual is just all those extra like things, like, you know, where UPS just loses your stuff, you know, or, you know, the printer, you know, thought you meant one thing, but you said the other, you know. So there's, you know, luckily we got the sweetest printers in the world, Comics Wellspring, who's just like absolutely amazing. But they weren't the first ones we tried, you know? So like, you know, you gotta find the people, you know, who can deliver those things. And we'd rather, you know, there's a saying we had, you know, in the army was, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast, because, you know, it always takes twice as long to do it over if you messed it up, you know, the first time. And it takes twice as long to build a relationship with someone, put an order in for 20 comics or 30 comics. Cause we get those requests where, hey, I want to buy a bunch of comics off of you guys. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not convinced I can get them to you on time in the manner that you're expecting, because we're out there in an environment with people who've been making comics for decades, you know? So the last thing I would hate to do is their first impression of lesser known comics is that we sent them a bunch of busted books that came late, and, you know, so, I know people can hold different, you know, opinions on, you know, how effective that model is or whatever. But, you know, I've been pretty proud of, you know, our relationship with comic book stores, you know, and you know, we get a lot of positive feedback, even from the, you know, that sometimes typical surly comic book shop owner that doesn't have anything nice to say about anything, you know, but they at least have been nice and pleasant to us. And, you know, so I think it's panning out.
But the digital stuff is all on your site, right?
We're going to go with Global Comics is like one of the ones. So, you know, so that's one thing to clarify too as well. So for example, lesser known comics will put out comics on the site, but then there's also like other digital distributors, you know, or people who have, you know, digital comics, whether it's Global Comics or Tapas or some of the other ones, right? And there's some good ones out there, but it's no surprise that Comixology is like the big kid on the block. We have a particular policy when it comes to Amazon, but that does not preclude creator-owned content from putting stuff on Amazon. That's my rule, not anybody else's rule. So like D-Lot has stuff on Comixology. Their stuff's available on Amazon. Like that's, you know, I'm not going to impose my ideals, you know, on an outside creator. Now, a lot of people within the company, you know, share some of that sentiment, but, you know, we're certainly not going to, you know, there's no party line, you know, there's certainly is about as diverse of a comic book company as you can get. I think we have pretty much every check block on the rainbow kaleidoscope of people. So we certainly don't all see things the same, and I don't expect this to. So yeah, I mean, we're going to stand for certain things, you know, and try and, you know, be successful and within certain parameters that we think are consistent with values that support the indie comic book scene as a whole. But no one's forced in that position that doesn't want to be.
So one of the big things going around the internet really over the past, I'm going to call it week and a half, because I'm not sure how time works anymore, is the whole Image thing and them going and unionizing. And I have always been a big proponent of pay the people who do things for you.
Yeah. So I think around like the chat room or whatever, you know, we have various group chats and stuff like that. So the general consensus was like, it begins !! You know, like, I think Charlie texted me Viva la Resistance or something like that. We're a big fan. Once again, I can only speak for, you know, myself and the stuff that's within, the mission statement that we have. So the mission statement, also just know it, that like before someone comes on, you know, to join us, they essentially agree to the mission statement or add anything on there, that they think is missing. It's a collectively made mission statement. Katie was very sure about that when we started the company. She was like, you know, yeah, paying people and treating people how they deserve, you know, is, you know, I think pretty consistent with what the comic book creator union is looking at. Ideally, we'd be in a situation where unions wouldn't be required, in the fact that if the creators own the company, you know, or essentially have a majority vote on what the company does, then the union kind of, you know, doesn't have anybody across the bargaining table but themselves. So I think that's what we want to strive for. But certainly, I gotta get the name wrong. Is it Comic Book Creator Union? Is that, what's their acronym?
I'm gonna have to look it up myself.
Yeah. But you know, I welcome, you know, anybody from a labor organization's advice, like, hey, you guys should do these things, you know, for your company, that you're not currently doing, you know, as long as it's consistent with, you know, the values of the team.
Yeah, I'm definitely happy for them. And I did say vive la revolution.
Okay.
but yeah.
Yeah, and the name for them is Comic Book Workers United.
Comic Book Workers United. Yeah, you know, to the point on solidarity too with indie comic creators and the community. So I'm new to this. Like, we literally started a podcast called I Don't Know S About Comics. See, I kept it PG-13. And we invite other creators on, and, you know, we promote their book, and they also tell us, you know, all the stuff that they're doing. And we ask all like those dumb questions, you know, that, you know, we're all wonder, but we're like too afraid to ask, you know, and it shows a really good time. But we also provide free advertisement space for indie comic book creators in the back of our books, because we know their time's valuable. Like Sovereign Comics, those guys have spent literally hours on the phone with us, like answering dumb questions. Indie Comics Dispatch has answered dumb questions for us. You know, Snowy Works, Mind Invader Comics, Phil Falco. He does the Haunting Comics. Like, you know, these are the people we just like, hey, like, how are you doing that thing that you're doing? Because it's awesome, you know. And the hour that they spend talking to us or any, you know, any one of us is an hour they could be creating their own thing, you know. So that should definitely go. That definitely should be recognized. And some of the things that we do, if we have a bulk run going out of comics, like we're going to print a bunch of comics, and another indie creator says, "Hey, Mark, what's your rate right now to print, you know, a bunch of Saddle Stitch comics, you know, because you're going to print a buttload of them," you know, we give them the rate that we have, and they say, "Oh, that's cheaper than what I'm paying. Can I jump on your bulk ride?" Absolutely. Like, you don't need to give us a handling cost. You don't need to give whatever. We only ask that don't make Jackie's life a nightmare, you know, on the graphic design, you know, standpoint. So right now we're partnering with Indie Comics Dispatch on, they got an anthology contest coming out. They're doing this awesome anthology contest, giving first-time creators a chance to make comics for the first time. The profits from it go to a charity. Snowy Works is another comic book creator that's helping with, you know, some of the logistics end and design and planning end. And all we're doing is, you know, throwing their books on our bulk run, and Jackie's helping with some graphic design stuff. Because people who are doing that type of stuff, they, you know, like I said, this is a mission, not a competition. So, you know, only have to do is ask, you know, and that goes for everybody, you know, in the indie comic community. Literally everybody, you know, there's not, I think, a single person we've ever said, you know, no to free advice. Anybody that we wouldn't help them achieve a discount on a bulk order or anything like that. So, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know if they're printing, like, I don't know, something crazy that's, you know, like hate speech, like, obviously we're not going to help them out, but, you know, like, but it's a pretty low bar. Just don't call for the extermination of any certain one type of person, and we'll probably help you out, you know.
That mission, not a competition, is kind of the opposite of the way I look at my podcast. Like, I definitely see it as a friendly competition, at least, though. I mean, it's people that I'm friends with. I want to be better than them, but I want them to be as good as they can possibly be. So when I'm better than them, it means more, and I can playfully rub it in their face, depending on who it is. And that's obviously something that's, you know, well calculated based on who it is and everything, and who I know is going to take it well, and who's going to be able to come back and say, "Yeah, but I booked this other person, so I'm about to jump right back ahead of you."
Yeah,
I feel like
Oh, go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like I'm always in competition with myself. Like, it's like, I don't want to say I don't care what other people are doing, because I do care. Like, I want them to make cool stuff that, because I'm also a consumer of this content. So, like, if you're making cool stuff, like, wow, I want to read it. I want to consume that content. But as far as making it, like I said, I'm just in competition with myself. Like, if everything I make feels like it's better than the last or cooler than the last, you know, I think that's a lot more exciting than comparing. I don't know. I don't really do that.
I think one of the things that's kind of in, like, you know, can be a misconception about that is, you know, hate to use like the army comparison, right? But like, I'd have people, you know, we do hikes or ruck marches or runs or whatever. And, you know, I would say to them, it's like, I don't care that you finished, you know, a half hour in front of your teammate. I care that you loop around at the end of that race, you know, at the end of that ruck, at the end of that run, and you go back to the last person in that line and you're encouraging them, you know, and shouting at them to join where everybody else is. Charlie's really good at letters, and Jackie, you know, she was working on something and she needs some help with letters, you know. I think in most business settings, you know, like Charlie could have said, well, why am I helping Jackie do her job? Like, am I getting paid part of Jackie's wages to help her do her job? You know, and, you know, vice versa, you know, like we all know something else that somebody else, you know, is not good at. So, you know, Jackie's better at letters now. And, you know, in addition to that, we have mentorship programs. So, you know, Andrea, even though he's, you know, an award-winning artist, like, you know, he's still, you know, would meet with a mentor that would tell him all the things that he did wrong in his comic. You know, Soren, a fantastic artist, you know, and he's doing the mentorship program as well. We're trying to, you know, expand that. So it's certainly not a, well, let's just settle and everything is, you know, because we definitely have strong agreements. You know, me and Jackie joke about how like intimidated we are by Katie, because like that chick can draw, you know. So it's like, you know, so there, you know, I guess it's just a matter of probably of terminology and definition rather than, you know, trying to look at a culture of you know letting anything just slide or not trying to improve yourselves.
Opinion. Then again, we're a bunch of hippies that are like really nice and friendly to each other. I don't know.
You know, my marketing half of me is like, we have to be competitive. We have to, you know, have all the statistics on which artists blah 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 this and which merch blah 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 this. But the artist hippie, lesser known comics half, is also like, is that the kind of culture we want to grow? Like, do we want to say, hey, your art's not good enough? It's not having as many likes as this person. It's just like, to me at least, that's just the least interesting part of making comic books. But that isn't to say of like, oh, wow, what is this comic book company doing? Like, that's an interesting idea. And, oh, I think we could do this and we could do it in our own way. And maybe not necessarily better, but definitely when creating art, having that competitive mindset can be a bit, I don't want to like throw around the word toxic, but it can really, like, you know, artists I think are very hard on themselves. And when you are constantly competing with everyone around you and yourself, that can stifle the creative process, which I think is the last thing that we want.
Yeah, Franco tortures himself enough already. He's such a strong comic book creator,
and surprises me. He's so like a genuinely literally like so gifted. Yeah
and he hands in like pages that, like he's yeah he hands in pages with such disappointment, like, I'm sorry that, you know, this isn't better. And you're like, this is the best thing I've seen, you know, that you've ever made.
We're just a bunch of tortured souls with imposter syndrome, and that's just how it is, you know.
Yeah, so you know, I would say that somebody was.
If I have something that I'm making, I mean, what would be your pitch to get me to bring it to lesser known?
I think it's a matter of. So luckily, you know, we haven't done a ton of recruiting. For the most part, people have come to us. Charlie, you were recruited. I saw your stuff and I was like, can you make a, you know, black, white, and hot pink comic with us? But everybody else, yeah. Because Katie, Franco, and Andrea were the first ones. And we've had... like Ray, for example, he's one of our guys who's like onboarding, you know, he said, I want to come make comic books there because I think X Thoughtless, you know, that's Katie's handle. You know, he didn't know who she was. He's, I just think X Thoughtless is amazing. And I want to make comic books wherever she's making comic books. actually he said he because he didn't know her gender. There are folks who have brought stuff to us, and I've said, you know, just it's just not at, you know, the caliber, you know, but we've certainly I do you know, free mentorship stuff all the time. You know, there's a lot of people who are really, really close, right? Like, they may be amazing artists, but they're not amazing sequential artists right now. Or, somebody who's, you know, writing something, but they haven't, you know, found, you know, the artist or the artistic style that they want to go for yet. It would be a longer conversation. I wouldn't say that there's essentially like a rubric or something for any particular person to come in. We do the minis. So even for somebody who's like established, so we're working on a comic with a guy who is, you know, he's very, very good. He's done super well on his own Kickstarters. You know, he could, you know, do awesome on his own, or he could do awesome with us. But I said, oh, let's do a mini together so that, you know, you understand how we work, and we understand how you work, and you're happy with it, you know, and then, before we get into like a four comic story arc, you know, the 22 pages each, you know, let's do a 6-page, not mini. I've been calling them minis, but they're essentially their ash can. So, you know, 6-page ash can. And you know, that's usually the trial phase. He's compensated for all of that. You know, but, it, you know, just depends on, you know, the individual as well. 'Cause also based on, we've had people who brought finished books to us, and, so like, you know, Soren, for example, so he brought 2 books to us, and, you know, I said, well, we don't have any staff positions open. You're welcome to put your book out with us and take 100% of the royalty, 100% of the royalty. Like, we don't want anything. We don't want recoup for cost of books. You know, your books are worth going out, because he's going to be successful. And, you know, you give that trust out to people, and, you know, people reciprocate it, you know. Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's a potential to get burned in the incubator model, but like, you know, for the most part, that's not what happens. For the most part, people reciprocate trust with trust, you know, and for the most part, that's what the community needs. 'Cause like, you know, God, making a comic is expensive. You know, if you just look at the pay rate or the page rate, and you look at what it costs to print it and design it and all that stuff, not to mention the time, you know, people got day jobs and stuff like that. So us having an incubator model where they can just like show up, fall in on an infrastructure that's like already positioned to make comic books, do their thing, you know, prove that they're a team player, you know, then like, yeah, they can stay as long as they want. And I feel like, what is it? Michael Scott, where he's like, I want to say you're hired and you can stay here as long as you, you know, stay here forever, you know, and maybe it's stupid and maybe it's, you know, a little naive or whatever, but you know, that's, I'd rather, you know, I'd rather get burned than be the jerk. That's for sure.
I mean, if I can come in and take 100% of the royalties and I have full confidence in the thing that I made, because we're assuming that the thing that I make is amazing here, because it's just easier that way. Why would I ever want a staff position over there?
If your royalties, you know, because I don't think, I mean, so like, for example, you know, so Charlie gets a roll up of what her royalties have, you know, would have been, you know, what all her comics have brought in, and it's currently less than what her salary is. At the point that that's inverted, I'm sure she'll switch it, unless she's wants just to have less money in her pocket. I don't know.
Yeah,
Charlie
also
can speak to her rationale for compensation.
I mean, it's like you said, right now, if I was solely based on royalties, I'd be making peanuts. So, you know, having a salary is really cool. It feels really good to get, you know, paid consistently for your art, and having a really flexible schedule that you can, you know, because I, you know, you can grind out a ton of work 1 week, right, and then maybe take off the rest of the month, or you can consistently work every day, and you don't have, like, you're getting paid consistently, and you get to, again, you get to work, like, the way you want to work, the way your life allows you to work. So that's a really big appeal for me. And again, you know, hopefully in the near future, royalties will outdo that salary, and I can, you know, be making more off, like, the popularity of the thing that I'm making, which would feel really amazing. Also, it's just really fun to, like, brainstorm with everybody. Like, it's honestly a blast. I think everyone on staff is really creative, has really fresh ideas, and, like, there's just, like, a lot of synergy, I think, especially between, like, me and Mark coming up with, like, the most ridiculous things and, like, turning them into, like, funny comics or, you know, just things that are, like, engaging. We have this joke that, you know, it's, like, everyone here, like, you have to be a delight to, like, be on staff. You have to be fun to work with. Like, you have to be, like, able to be a team player and, like, and, yeah, just, like, be fun. I don't know. So I definitely like that, and everyone I work with here is definitely a delight.
I guess I could also just add to that of why working on staff or being a staff member is fun is, like, a lot of artists are introverts, and or being into comics are nerdy or whatever, and so at least, like, you know, maybe my in-person friends or people not related to my job don't really want to talk about it, or it's maybe harder to find those people. But to have every day to go somewhere to be like, yo, this is so, I stayed until 2 a.m, I was reading this, and oh my gosh, I loved what you did. And, like, or, hey, I have this really weird idea, any thoughts, you know? And that's the magic, I think, of being on this team.
I think it increases risk-taking too. So, you know, once again, there is no line between people who are working on scripts I make and their own stuff. So, like, Franco came to me, and, you know, he was in the middle of a bunch of books with me, and he said, hey, I want to make this comic book that has no words on it. It's kind of weird. I'm not sure how it's going to work out. I'm not sure if it's any good. And I was like, I guess we'll just try it. I guess we'll find out, you know. I don't think if people were getting paid page rates, or, like, flat rate, or relying solely on royalties, that they could say that, you know, that they would, you know, they'd be like, why would I take a chance on something that I think is cool but is a little risky? And
yeah, I
love
agree
that
with that, definitely. Like, you wouldn't, if you didn't have every confidence that it would sell, you wouldn't spend, you know, weeks doing preliminary work and then, you know, like, inking it and then coloring it. Like, you wouldn't go through weeks or months of doing that, you know, if there wasn't a payoff. So having that salary and, like, having the company backing you definitely allows you to take those risks.
And not to put Katie on blast, but, like, yeah, she definitely took a chance on a book, on a coloring technique. And she was like, well, I'm never doing that again. Like, that was a big, you know, waste of time, you know. Well, it wasn't all a waste of time. Like, she, at the end of the project, she was like, I could have done this completely differently. But she tried a new technique, and she, you know, learned a bunch of stuff. And she got paid the same as if, you know, she had done it, you know, correctly and efficiently the whole time, you know. So I think that level of innovation is important, because most of the time it works out, you know. Most of the time, you know, Kayla, you know, if you heard her pitch for her last comic, the Hara, like, you would have been like, no way. Yeah, you just been like, no way. I'm, you know, but then you got the book and you're like, oh my God, this is really good. I love this book, you know. So not only do we want you to do that one, but we want you to do 4 of them every year, you know. So I think it's working well for us, the trying to foster innovation that way.
Yeah, and I think this all comes back to, you know, it's for the culture, because you wouldn't get so many experimental projects if you didn't have an environment that allowed them to incubate and to exist.
I mean, maybe it's just the names of the people involved, but, you know, I Breathe the Body is still a thing that exists. I don't know if that's one y'all are familiar with.
Can you repeat that? I'm not sure I caught that.
I mean, maybe it's the people involved with it, but, you know, I Breathe the Body is still a title that exists. And I don't know, I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around why you wouldn't really have me locked in to put stuff out with you. Because, I don't know.
Like, you're wondering why you have every freedom to leave at any time?
It just seems like a weird business decision to me.
Yeah, it's certainly counterintuitive. And it's been really hard to get investors to say, you know, hey, when things get tight, you know, we're not going to cut our lowest performing creator. You know, that's a lot of business 101. I think that's why we, luckily we do have, some funds to last through, you know, 2023 and beyond. I think we'll have to make, obviously, like, decisions if people don't have growth, you know. So for example, if someone's not making a good comic book, but they're not doing anything to improve upon that, you know, one, they wouldn't have been on the team if they didn't have chops in the first place. Like, if you're on the team, you have the chops to make a quality comic book, you know, by the standards of lesser known comics. If you stop performing to that, you know, caliber because, you know, by, you know, just virtue of you just didn't want to do the work or something like that. Obviously that's a tough conversation to have, right? With some, hey, you know, like, what's going on? But a lot of times too, like, you know, if people's work dips, it probably has nothing to do with their talent. It probably has a lot to do with other things that are going on in their life. You know, not surprising, but mental health is, you know, like, affects creators at like a crazy higher proportion than the rest of the country. So the last thing we're going to do is just be like, oh, you suck, your last thing sucked, by, you know, versus being like, hey, what's going on? Like, you know, tell me what's going on in your life that's making creating comics so difficult. And a lot of the time, you know, because when we do our huddles, you know, it's a lot of the stuff is, you know, 90% of people's success all when they're drawing has to do with what's happening when they're not drawing, you know? I think that's, you know, I think that's one of the differences of, you know, of how we operate. So, I mean, you know, to your question, I think there's a lot of other parts that have value of bringing a creator-owned, you know, entity, you know, trying to, like, you know, bestow that trust and say, hey, you can come in here, you can create as much as you want. And then when you're done, like, do your own thing, or, you know, or when something better comes along for you, like, go do your own thing. That's awesome. Like, go do that. You know, cause there's, you know, our books always look great when they're next to other great books, you know? So, you know, that's not a dollars and cents value, but we do get some value from there. There's no way to quantify that on a royalty sheet. You know, there's no way to quantify the fact that, you know, because somebody went to our website because they liked Charlie's book, they bought Franco's book too. There's just, I can't, you know, maybe I'll get some data scientists that can help me, you know, distill that. But our books are all better because we have good people on them. So like everyone benefits from being part of that team. The other part too that is measurable is Charlie does a convention or Charlie does a book signing. Every single book in our arsenal, you know, goes out with her, you know, on there. So she's giving those freebies out and she's saying, oh, you know, hey, you know, what books do you like? Oh, you may like, you know, Franco's book, or you may like Kayla's book or whatever. And we're spread, what, 10 people across the country, one in Argentina, one in Spain, one that bounces around Italy occasionally. Like, that's a real powerful asset to have, you know, at someone's disposal, you know, especially if they're just starting out.
Yeah, what kind of schedule? Sorry. I was just going to say, like, obviously, you know, everyone wants to make money, but we are really striving to make just, like, really good content. And I think that might, putting the content first is kind of the counterintuitive part. I don't know if that makes sense.
I'd say like the community first, then the content comes, then the money comes.
Community, yeah.
It is a very backwards way of being like that, you know, because I think that there's going to be tough times. There's going to be things that'll come, you know, there certainly has been, right, where relationships are strained, you know, but we have a really solid base, you know, and, you know, we've had some difficulties this summer, and like the amount of support, you know, from the rest of the team, you know, has been awesome, you know, like when I, you know, cause I get that feeling where it's like, oh man, this is really tough. And like, I don't know if I want to, you know, do this anymore. And like, you know, everything's the worst and blah, blah, blah. You talk to Charlie or Jackie for 2 minutes, you know, and then you're just like, you know, or Franco just turns in some pages and then like that energy just shoots like right through the roof. And you're just like, you're like, man, like, I can't believe I get to do this every day.
Yeah. Yes. And also to stress, like, we're new and definitely it's important when we're onboarding these new artists to say like, this is our mission statement. It's maybe a crazy idea. Here's what our expectations are. You know, it might go poorly. But if you're willing to make this risk, then so are we. And so, you know, it's also a choice for those artists as well. I guess that's all I have to say to that.
So what kind of schedule are you guys expecting to be able to put things out on? Because I know I get rather annoyed when Diamond decides they're just not going to deliver my books because I get weird little things that they only order 2 copies of.
The general plan, so we always have like these minis that are coming out. I really got to stop saying minis. We always have these ash cans coming out. And those are, you know, just little snippets of like, all the stories that we have on offer. We did the minis to kind of get a sense, like to work through all the, you know, all the problems of making comics. So we, you know, the nice part is we just put out our first 2 full issues. Charlie did one and Soren did one, but we already had like 13, 14 books under our belt, you know, because it's one thing to make a comic. It's another thing to design it. It's another thing to send it to the printer. It's another thing to know the paper quality. It's another thing to like go through the whole like proofing process and stuff like that. And then do all that with things that you don't anticipate. Like, so for example, although I was expecting, you know, the birth of my daughter, you know, in August, I was not expecting that my wife would be readmitted to the hospital and, you know, having to navigate like an ER visit, you know, extended ER visit during COVID times while, like, 2 days before Free Comic Book Day. Those are the things that they, you know. So we learn all that stuff. We do those minis, and then for the most part, as we go into our full schedule, we have story arcs. It'll be one every quarter, and but we split the quarter kind of more into, like, I don't know, I guess they're little 20% of the year, so that if Charlie says, my third quarter title is going to be late, you know, we have a backup date, you know, to push that out at. Most of the books should be for a year. Four comics of four full issues on a quarterly basis.
And it looks like Mark and Jackie froze up.
Is it quiet for anybody else?
Yep, somebody disconnected. It definitely wasn't me, because I don't have my hands anywhere near the buttons that would disconnect. Well, I see you moving, Jackie, so that's a good sign.
I see you moving too. Oh, there you are, Mark.
Did you guys just lose me, or did everybody drop off?
It looks like I don't know if it's like an everybody kept themselves, but I seem to be the only person who stayed in here from my end.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it looked
for me too.
Okay. Am I good? Okay, yeah, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Quarterly books get tough, though. Like, you've got... If that doesn't come out, all of a sudden, when am I getting the next part of the story? Am I taking this money that I was planning on spending on that and spending it on something else because it's there? Like, how do you work around somebody whose book is just going to be late?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to, you know, like I said, we're a new company. So I think I've heard people say it either way, right? Like, where, you know, I get annoyed. And some people, you know, like, they say, yeah, regardless of how annoyed I am, it's like, I'm, you know, if the story's good enough, I'm going to be hooked. Obviously, we wouldn't intend on being late. We've definitely been late. Getting stuff out, but our process has been getting faster, because, you know, just by virtue of the more books we make, the faster we get at doing it. The other thing that we've done is we've done a lot more of, like, the front loading effort. So at the point that a book is announced, it's essentially done at this point. We learned the hard lesson. We're like, well, the pages are done, so it must be done. Right. And it's like, no. There's, like, a lot more that goes in from the time that the pages are done to the point that it's actually back from the printer. I think in order to prevent late books, what our general plan is to push out that that cutoff date. So we'll probably end up sitting on books for quite a while. So even though Charlie, you know, maybe done with her four issue arc, you know, in, you know, 2023, it may be an arc that we sit on till 2024. You know, right now we don't have that luxury because we have to push out books, you know, with, you know, like 3 months lead time or something. But the goal is to make that a 4 month and 5 month lead time. I just couldn't say right now how quickly we'd be able to accomplish that.
Yeah, I do think that's a really good question, and, like, an important consideration. I know right now, like, it's really early, but I'm, like, I'm planning stuff, it, like, well into next year, just so that it's ready ahead of time, because I don't, you know, I had one thing that was kind of late, and I'm, like, I don't like that feeling at all. So, you know, I don't want to do that again, certainly. Because, and, you know, you don't know, it, like, what'll happen. So if you have a lot planned ahead and, like you said, front loaded, like, you know, then you don't really have to worry about it being late because, you know, the project is done X months in advance. But yeah, it is a little early, but ideally in the future, I know for my projects, I definitely want to be planning well ahead of time.
Yeah, we're sitting on we got four done books right now, right? That just missed the cutoff for batch 3. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. As someone who does those won't the be production. Late. Yeah. I was, you know, it's very exciting, you know, to be like, oh, we have all these great ideas and all these artists are going to do these things. And I'm like, all right, great. We need to talk about the margins. Okay. Like the things that are not fun. We need to talk about how we're going to write the copyright for this particular creator, whatever it is. And so, and those things unfortunately can take a minute of like little finessing here and there. And, so definitely had, you know, we all sat down. I'm like, okay, guys, for the sake of my mental health, we all need to have this cutoff date and we can't be promoting these books if they're not, you know, sent to print. You know, it's not over until it's sent to print, basically. So we are definitely getting better at it. And, the administration production side is just not as fun.
And we don't want to ever paint the picture that there's not disagreements, because Jackie has certainly reached out to me and have been like, Mark, WTF, you know, do you realize what you just promised and what that means for my workload, you know? And we talked about it and like obviously, like any time that somebody you have so much faith in and so much trust in, it's like, hey, this is jacked up and we got to fix it. Like, you know, it's like, okay. Like, and I don't know, in Jackie's case, we had what, like 3 phone calls and then separate phone calls with our mentor, you know, to kind of be like, am I seeing this your way? Are you seeing this my way? You know, but at the end of the day, like, you know, Jackie said it best when she said, it's not me versus you. It's us versus the problem. You know, how are we going to get past this? That's where we want to be as a company, because, you know, then the mess ups become much more, you know, surmountable.
Well, I feel like that's as good a place as any to end things, because I have to get to sleep and wake up in the morning. But it has been great talking to all of you about this. Where else can we find you all around the internet?
That's a good question. Instagram is a great place to keep current. So we have all our stuff posted there. All our illustrators and creators, writers included, are tagged on every single one of our posts, so you can always dive into their stuff. And then obviously lesserknowncomics.com is a good place to check out a bunch of free digital downloads. There's a couple there that are for sale. And then I think our shop's going to be live pretty soon. So, you know, once again, we want to make sure if someone buys something on the shop, they're not waiting forever to get it. So the shop, I think, has been semi-live for a while, in the fact that, you know, we've just been, you know, waiting to make sure our supply chain is where it needs to be. But yeah, lesserknowncomics.com, Instagram at lesserknowncomics, and then definitely follow these guys, at JackieAnnArt, .art.
Chris, thanks for having us. My handle is art, and then period, JackieAnn, A-N-N-E. And my Lesser Known Comics email is Jackie@lesserknowncomics.
Yeah, you can definitely find me on Instagram. I update that the most. If you want some cool memes, I also post those to my story. and that is at Charlie Ragnarok on Instagram. And it should be the same for Twitter as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chris. I mean, I know this was short turnaround, and I know there's a lot more prep that goes into making a podcast episode than just, you know, like, you know, dialing in and pressing record. So thank you so much for the opportunity, man.
Well, you're definitely welcome. Well, you're definitely welcome. And as always, of course, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because that's so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send you some links and stuff after this.
All right. So, magic button.
So that is the rather unedited interview. If you want to go back and double check any of what you heard for any reason, there are transcripts available in the show notes. As this is posted, they are going to be the automatic transcripts that I get from my recording thing. And as I can get them cleaned up, I will have cleaner versions in the show notes. But I still feel like having this automatic version up is going to be useful for some people. I hope that getting this unfiltered view is going to give you the information that you need to make a better informed opinion on what is happening in this situation, what is happening with both of the publishers involved here, with all of the people involved here, everything like that. You know, I hope that I have presented everybody in the correct light. You know, I don't want to turn into a battleground for two people fighting things out, but I am going to hold myself responsible for making sure that the things said on my show are correct as much as possible. And that's really the only thing I can ask of myself here. So, again, if you listen to this without listening to the episode before it, bonus episode 69, Legacy Comics with Patrick Hickey Jr., make sure you listen to that one. When you have two people going back and forth like this on issues that aren't just like super blatantly there is a correct side of it, then you do need to make sure you hear both sides. So I would say, definitely go back and listen to Patrick's episode. This is the only one you've listened to. And I will be adding something in the show notes to Patrick's episode saying to come and listen to this one so that everybody can have the full experience.